Okay, page Chav Beis Amid Aleph. We're in the middle of the Gemara.
Make sure it's the right Gemara.
Yeah. Marcus. Yeah, you're right. You got it. Okay, you know, we're going to start again. Just quickly from Chav Beis Amid Aleph, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13 lines in the top. Okay, the first few lines we learned already last time, but it's one continuation. Basically, the Mishnah, there was a din that if somebody does one plowing with one animal, Chav Beis. Yeah. Page 43. The Gemara says, the Mishnah, there was a din that if somebody plows with a Sharna Chamer, it could come out to be 8 Avedis at one time. You could do one act and get 8 times Malkus. So the Gemara says, Maskul Ravabesh, we'll just do this quickly. Why don't you also learn another example was if he would plow in a field that the Torah says you're not allowed to plow because it was a Egla Rufus, so you found a dead body outside the city. And you're not allowed to do it because it says, Ashele Yovit Bavalo Yizareya. You're not allowed to work in the field. You're not allowed to plant in the field. Maskalo Rav Chanina, Rav Chananya, I mean, Rav Chananya asked a different question. L'choshen Nami Amecha Kasashem Balichosei. Why don't you learn another possible sin that while he's plowing, he's erasing the name of God that's on the ground. And while he's plowing, it's like written God's name in the earth, and the guy's plowing the field, so they're erasing Hashem's name. And also, like it says, where do we learn that it's forbidden? Because it says, V'ibadetem eshmam. The Torah says you have to destroy the names of idols. And then the Pasuk says, Leisashen kein l'Hashem alekeichem. That you're not allowed to do this to God, your God. Which, by the way, this is the source that we know that you're not allowed to erase the name of Hashem. If Hashem's name is written, you're not allowed to erase the name of Hashem. And therefore, you know, a lot of times a sefer has a problem. If he's writing something and there's a mistake, and sometimes you can't erase the name of Hashem to correct the mistake, so the whole tefillin is invalid, or the mezuzah would be invalid, because you can't fix it if you have to erase the name of Hashem. You're not allowed to erase the name of Hashem. In fact, there's an interesting shaila in Halacha. I mean, I don't know why, but while we're on the topic, just an interesting shaila. What happens if you have a tape recorder, and somebody makes a tape, let's say, of Chumash, or for a bar mitzvah kid, you know, they make a tape, with the Kriya Sateira or the Haftarah, and you have Hashem's name in it. So the question is, are you allowed to erase the tape? Because then you'd be erasing the name of Hashem. So there's a whole question in Halacha. So most opinions say that it's not really, or I'll give you another example. What happens if you have your computer on, and on the screen it says G-O-D? Because this sin, by the way, is in any language. It doesn't only mean in Hebrew. If you have the name of God, you're not allowed to cross it out.
G-O-D, you can't do that?
No, G-O-D is the name of Hashem. Any official name of Hashem in any language, if that's the official name of Hashem in that language, you're not allowed to erase it either. So what happens if you have a computer, and you have, let's say, Hebrew things on the computer, you know, let's say you're Baruch Ato Hashem, or G-O-D on a computer. So now you can close the computer, you're erasing the name of Hashem. So the whole shelf, you're allowed to do it. So basically, the right, you're allowed to do it. Except the right by tapes, it's better, rather than just erase the tape, it's better to tape over it. When you tape over the tape, it erases it anyway, but you shouldn't just erase the tape, you should just record over it, so then you're not actively erasing it. It's only passive, but the truth is, it's not really the name of Hashem, because it's not written. Not in a computer, it's just a bunch of dots. It's not actually written. No, that's not written either. The only time you have a problem with God's name would be on paper.
Like English books?
Yeah, it depends. Well, then you sometimes go into the Shaila, is it the name of God if an apicatus wrote it, a person who doesn't believe wrote it? In fact, there's a whole Shaila and the coins and the dollar bills that says, in God we trust. Yeah? So if somebody rips up a dollar bill, or somebody takes it into the bathroom, or, you know, I mean, that's not erasing, that's tam. But these are all issues that come up in Halacha, you should know, about erasing the name of Hashem. So the Gemara is quite coming back to the Gemara. So the Gemara is asking, maybe when you're plowing the field, while you're plowing the field, you're going to erase the name of Hashem. So that's an additional negative commandment. Or, Maskele, Rababu asks another question, V'lechoshiv, Nami, why don't you consider, if somebody cuts off his leprosy. You know, in the old time they had leprosy. And the Torah says, if you have leprosy, you're not allowed to cut it off. And if you do, you get malchus. So what happens if somebody's plowing the field? And while he's plowing the field, he cuts off his leprosy. So that's another scenario of possible malchus. Vazarose mihochen, that you're not allowed to do it. We learn it out from the pasuk. Hishame b'neged tzaras. You have to be careful with the concept of leprosy, not to erase it. Or Maskavlo Abaye, Abaye asks the question, another question, V'lechoshiv Nami, why don't we also consider the case of a Maziach HaChayshin Mi'alo Eifed? The Kohen Gadol wore the Chayshin, the breastplate with the stones of the 12 tribes, and he wore the Chayshin on top of the Eifed. And the Chayshin was connected to the apron, to the Eifed. And the Torah says, V'lechoshiv HaChayshin Mi'alo Eifed, you're not allowed to move the breastplate off the apron. So what happens if somebody, while they were plowing, did it? So, the Mefarshim discuss, how do you have such a scenario? So one of the ways was, while you're plowing, you're knocked into the Kohen Gadol. While you're plowing, you're knocked into the Kohen Gadol, and you cause the Chayshin to separate itself from the Eifed. So that can also be a scenario. Huh? Well, the funny thing is, the Gemara doesn't answer the questions. Taisus Taki asked the question. We're not done yet with the Gemara. We have a few more questions. But the Gemara is, because the Mishnah said 8. You can have a scenario, because the whole Malkus is talking about getting Malkus. So the Mishnah said a scenario, you can do one act and get 8 times 39. Right? Like we learned last time, or 2 times ago. So the Gemara is asking, why are you saying 8 when you really could have a scenario of more? And all these people, by the way, the Gemara doesn't answer them, which means the question remains. So Taisa says, you're right. According to the end of the Gemara, you can have like 15 sins possible by plowing with one ox and donkey. You can end up with 15 times 39 malchus. Okay? Why does the Mishnah say 8? Because the Mishnah says 8. The Mishnah just wants to show that there's a possible that one sin can get 8 times Malkus. But the truth is, it could be more than 8. It could be 12, 15, 20, 30, whatever. Or amaset by the Arden, or removing the poles of the Arden, the Ark and the Beis HaMikdash, Torah says you have to carry it by hand. And they used to have poles that they should be able to carry it, you know, on their shoulders when they moved the Arden. Even in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah says the Ark had to have badim, the poles. And there was a din, you're not allowed to remove the poles from the Aron. So if somebody did while they were plowing, again, it's the same scenario.
Wait, what would it be doing in the graveyard?
Huh?
What would the Aron be doing in the graveyard?
So they would, look, the Ritva explains that remove the Ark's poles and plowed with them. That means the Ritva learns, what's the pshat? How do you get separating by plowing? How do you separate the poles from the Ark? So he says, either you took off the poles and you plowed with them. And they write that even though this is done before it, first you remove the poles and then already you get Malkus. So even before you plowed. The Gemara said, but it's one long continuous act. You remove the poles in order to plow. But other people say no. What happened was the Kohen Gadol or the Aron happened to be in the field. And when you plow, like we said before, the plow knocked into the Kohen Gadol or knocked the poles out of the Aron. It's not a very everyday common case, obviously. But the Gemara just says there's a possible scenario that you could do one Aveda and get whipped 20 times. Hypothetical cases. Okay, this is where I think where we left off. So now Maskala Rav Ashi, again, it's the same thing. Rav Ashi asked another question. L'choshev, Nami, why don't you also count a case of a chedesh ba'atzei asheira? If one used wood from an asheira tree to plow. What's an asheira tree? The Torah says, Leisita l'cho asheira kol eitz. In the olden times, the goyim had a custom that they would have trees, and they would bow down to the trees. And that tree, because it was worshipped, became Aveda Zara. If it became Aveda Zara, you're not allowed to benefit from it. You're not allowed to benefit from it. So if somebody took the wood from an Asheda tree and used it as a plow, so that's another sin. Because he's doing the wood, using the wood of Asheda. And how do you know that you're not allowed to use it? Because in order to get whipped, the Torah has to say you're not allowed to use it. He said, because it says, Yidbak, biyotcha me'uma, you're not allowed to hold in your hand anything from Aveda Zara. Anything from the Aveda Zara. Or, Maskula Ravina, Ravina asked another question. You can have another case. L'choshiv nami akeitis ilonis tevis. There's a din, you're not allowed to cut down fruit trees. This is a very practical din in California, by the way. You're not allowed to cut down a fruit tree. The Torah says, so the Gemara says, you're not allowed to cut down a fruit tree. The only exceptions, the few exceptions in halacha, that you're allowed to cut down a fruit tree. For instance, if the fruit tree doesn't bear fruits, or if you need the place for building. In other words, you need, it's in your backyard, and you want to extend your house. So then halacha is, you're not allowed to knock down a fruit tree. And there's different cases in halacha, but stam, to take a fruit tree and chop it down, is a biblical prohibition. So he says, what happens if somebody, during the plowing, knocked down a fruit tree? So again, that would be another aveda.
When are you permitted to do it?
If you need the space where the tree is on.
For what?
To build your house. To build a pool. To build, make your house bigger. Or
even
it's darkening your windows. What?
Even to build a pool?
Yeah.
This is for today too? Or is
it today also. No. This din applies today also. The din applies today also.
You can't just do it because you don't like it.
You can't do it because you don't like it. No. Again, in New York, you know, they don't have too many fruit trees growing. But in California, the shiloh comes up a lot. Comes up a lot. So, and then Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid right, in addition to the fact that it's forbidden, he writes it's sakana if you do it. So some people say even when the Torah says you're allowed to do it, it's sakana. But that Alter Rebbe writes that in the Kei in Shechonar, he brings down that when the Torah says when the halacha says you're allowed to do it, it's not sakana. Some people have a minig, it's brought down in halacha. Some people have a custom that if they want to knock down the fruit tree, even if it's allowed, they'll sell the tree to the goy. I mean, nobody chops down trees themselves today. You call a company and they knock down the tree. So before they knock down the tree, you sell them the tree for a dollar because it's connected to the ground. And ground, earth, you could sell with money. Tangible items, you're not kena with money. But land, you could acquire with money. So the guy buys a tree, the company that's going to knock down the tree, buys a tree from you beforehand for a dollar, so it's not even your tree anymore. So they're not even knocking down your tree, they're knocking down their tree. Some people do that way, you know, as another way of getting out of it, so to speak.
So you're allowed to do that even if you just don't want it?
Some people say yes and some people say no. No, I'm saying it's just time as a, you know, to do a trick, like sell it to the guy and have him do it. Some people say you can't, some people say you can't. I'll give you an example. You're not allowed to, what's it called, neuter your dog. You can't sterilize an animal. Huh?
Neuter.
Can't neuter your dog. So it says in halacha, okay, so a guy will say, I'll sell it to a guy, and I'll neuter the dog, and then I'll buy it back. So it says you can't do that. That you're not allowed to do.
How about a horse?
Same thing.
It's dangerous. The horse is dangerous.
So?
When you ride it, it's dangerous.
So don't ride a horse.
Stallion is dangerous.
Don't ride a horse.
How about if it's not a tree? Let's say for strawberries.
It's only on the tree.
So the strawberry tree is not...
It's not a tree, it's a bush.
Same thing, banana.
Yeah, that's why it's all dumb. It doesn't have a din of a tree.
So you could cut
probably. Okay. Amalei Rab Zeira l'Rabbi Mani, Rab Zeira said to Rab Mani, he said, L'choshiv Nami, I have a different case. And this is a very interesting Gemara coming up. What happens, he says, a guy makes a vow, he's not going to plow on Yom Tov. If you remember, the case of the Mishnah was that the guy plowed with a Shor Chamer that belonged to Hegdash and Yom Tov. Okay? So now the Gemara is going to ask another sin. What happens if a guy made a vow that he won't plow on Yom Tov? And now he's plowing on Yom Tov. So now he's not only desecrating Yom Tov, but he's desecrating his vow.
Can I make a vow?
Oh, 1 second. So that's the whole this discussion now in the Gemara. It's very interesting, Shaila, because you're already pre-sworn. You can't make a shvua on a shvua. If a guy makes a vow, I'm not going to eat meat. He can't make a second vow, I'm not going to eat meat, because you're already pre-sworn. So the Gemara is going to discuss now, L'cha'edah were already pre-sworn at Har Sinai to keep the mitzvahs. So already sworn on Yom Tov from Har Sinai to keep Yom Tov. So how can you make a vow that I'm not going to, that I'm going to keep Yom Tov? It's not even a vow. Right? Well, let's see the Gemara inside. Amle Rabzil Rabbi, Rabmani to Rabmani, L'choshiv Nami, let's consider also another case that a guy made a shvua, Shaleachrish B'Yomtif. I won't plow a field on Yomtif. And now he's plowing on Yomtif. So in addition to all the other sins, he's also transgressing the sin that he desecrated his vow. Right? So the Gemara says, 1 minute. Hasam Le'kala Shvua. Over there, the shvua doesn't take effect. Why not? The Gemara says, because Mushba Vahemid Mahar Sinai. He's already pre-sworn from Har Sinai. And as a rule, you can't make a shvua on a shvua. You can't make a vow on a vow. So the Gemara says, that's not a good question, because the vow won't be effective. But the Gemara is going to answer, I'll give you a case where the vow would be effective. What's the case? Amalei, Rab Zi'ida answered, I'll give you a case. The Amar, he says like this, Shvua Shalei Yachresh, a guy makes the following vow. I swear I will not plow, not during the weekday, and not on Yom Tov. Now, once the Shvua becomes effective for the weekday, which it does because you're not pre-sworn not to plow on the weekday. Once the Shvua is already effective, I'm part of it. It becomes effective on the whole thing. And the Gemara says an interesting din, basically. That means if a guy makes a vow, I will not plow on Yom Tov, and he plows on Yom Tov, he didn't desecrate his vow. He desecrated Yom Tov. But the vow, he didn't ruin. He didn't desecrate the vow. But if a guy says, I swear that I won't plow during the week and on Yom Tov, because the Shvua becomes effective for the weekday, it becomes effective even on Yom Tov. And then if he plows on Yom Tov, he did desecrate his vow. If the vow is only on the mitzvah, the vow is ineffective. But if it's effective on non-mitzvah and mitzvah, it becomes effective for both. That's the rule. Huh? Yeah. If a guy swears, I'm not going to eat chazer, and he eats chazer, again, he gets whipped for eating chazer, but not for the shvur. Yeah, then it would be effective. Yeah, I'll give you an example. I mean, any mitzvah. Like, you can't say, I swear I'm not going to eat chazer on the weekday or on Shabbat. I mean, but let's say, if a guy swears, I'm not going to eat chametz on Pesach. And he eats chametz on Pesach, he didn't break the vow. But if he says, I'm not going to eat chametz year-round and on Pesach, so then when he eats chametz on Pesach, he did desecrate the vow. And he'll be punished for it. Correct.
He's not going to get whipped again because he desecrated on Yom Tov too. He's only, he was going to only...
If he was warned every time separately, he's going to get whipped.
So if, when it's become but it's affected during the day. He gets sweeped then and then on Yom Tov also.
Correct. So now the Gemara is going back to the original question. So if so, that the vow does become effective. So why does the Mishnah count another case? That a guy swore he's not going to plow on the weekday and on Yom Tov, and he plowed on Yom Tov, so he's going to get whipped also for the vow. So the Gemara answers as follows. Me did the isya b'she'ila like tani. The Gemara answers, see, some questions the Gemara answers, some they don't. Here the Gemara says, the Mishnah doesn't discuss things that you could undo. If you make a vow, you could undo the vow. You know, you do ataras nedarim. Right? You nullify the vows. You annul the vows. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah doesn't mention this aveda, because the Mishnah is not mentioning avedas that you could undo. So right away the Gemara is going to ask, but the Mishnah said the animals were hegdish. Hegdish you could undo. If you redeem them, you could undo them. If you redeem Egdish, then the animal is not holy anymore. And yet the Mishnah does count it. So the Gemara said, V'lay, but a Egdish are consecrated animals. That you're allowed to annul it, to undo, you know, undo the Egdish, and yet the Mishnah mentions it. So the Gemara says it's speaking about Egdish that you can't undo. What Egdish can't you undo? An animal that was born holy. How? A firstborn animal. Bchor is born holy. Something you made Hegdish, you can unmake. But if you never made it Hegdish, it's born Hegdish, there's no way you could undo it.
What if it was born to an animal that was designated for
Korban? It'd also be Hegdish from birth. Unless, maybe, I don't know what would be the din, let's say, if you consecrated an animal for the Beis HaMikdash, and then the animal gave birth, so that animal's also holy. The baby is also holy, right? And then you undid the vow. I don't know offhand what the din is. Does it undo both? Or just undoes what you did? But what God did, that you can't undo. I don't know what that din is. What? Right. That's but if somebody becomes a Jew, you can't undo it either. If somebody converts, you can't later change your mind. Okay, I decide to be a guy again. If they converted properly, whatever that means, if the conversion was done kahalacha, you can't undo it. But you know, there's a case that this din applies even today. There's once a story mentioned it by the shiurim ones. Sometimes in the schools, they teach the kids how to bake challah, or in the camps in the schools, they teach the girls how to bake challah, and then they teach them the mitzvah of separating challah, you know, the separation and burning it and the whole process. So there's once a story here in the school. Then I had it already a few times since then. There's once a shayla here in the school that the girls baked challah and they separated challah. Now this challah basically is holy. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you have to go to the kohen. Today, because we don't know who is a real kohen, you burn it. You know, you put it in aluminum foil and you burn it in the oven. The point, what happened was, by mistake, that piece of challah, which is forbidden to eat, they got it mixed back up with the rest of the challahs. And you didn't know that somebody took the piece of dough and braided it into a challah. Oh. So now it's mixed with all the other challahs and you don't know which is a forbidden piece of food. So it's a big dilemma what to do, because you can't eat any of the challah. So what we had to do, we had to set up a bezdin. A bezdin went to the girls' school. They made a whole assembly out of it. It's very interesting. They made a whole educational process out of it. The next day, or the day same that I remember, was the same day or not, we went, three rabbanim went to the school. And the girl, it was a bas mitzvah girl, because if it's under bas mitzvah, it doesn't have a din of challah, because they're too young. So So the bas mitzvah girl, we found out it was a bas mitzvah girl that did it. And in front of the Bezdin, she nullified the vow of separating challah that she did. And the Bezdin said, mutalach, 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 you know, that the whole process. And we undid her separation of the challah. So that piece wasn't holy anymore. So what they did was, he put all the challah together and they now separated challah again. So this is a case, even today, where you can take something that was like hegdish, something that became holy, and which forbids all the food to eat, and you can undo it to nullifying the vow, and then everything becomes like normal, and then you have to separate challah again. What? It's not a question retroactive. Challah, you could separate either before you bake it or after you bake it. Let's say if you baked 10 challahs, okay? And you didn't separate challah. So after they're finished baking, you put them all together in a big pan, and you cover them, and then you separate, you end up ruining a challah, basically, that is not whole anymore. But you could take challah after it's baked, and you take it, and then you burn that piece. It doesn't have to be before you bake it. It could be done after you bake it. You're just not allowed to eat that challah until you separate it challah, whether it's before or after.
You could do it on one challah also. You know, let's say you made one, you could just take off.
No, you need a certain amount of flour to obligate in challah. That's different.
It's not the same concept where you have the majority and you don't know.
Yeah, by Hagdish there's no majority though. Hagdish doesn't become batel berov. Hagdish doesn't become nullified in majority.
But the meat would have?
Meat would have.
Or you don't know the utensil, which utensil is now.
Right.
So if you nullify.
That's one of the issues with the shaitels now, with the Indian hair. I don't know how many of you heard of it, didn't hear of it, but. Those shout with the Indian hair and the shaitels of Aveidah Zarah. So, one of the concepts is that most of the shaitel don't come from India. And therefore, when you buy a shaitel here, you can assume it's not from India. With Indian hair. It's one of the many aspects of this whole halachic issue.
What's the latest when
you've done
that?
Latest, same thing as before.
So, do you know by the, let's say you point to the cow for hagdish and you nullify it, you still have to replace it afterwards?
It depends what you said. For instance, there's what's called neder and there's what's called nedava. One of them is you say, if a guy says, he makes a vow, I am giving a behemoth to the Beis HaMikdash. A behemoth to the Beis HaMikdash. And then he selects an animal. Yeah? And the animal dies. He has to give another animal. What happens if a guy points to a certain animal, a particular animal, and says, I'm giving this animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and then the animal dies, he doesn't have to give another one. If a guy says, I'm giving an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, you can sit. Yeah. If a person says, I'm giving an animal to the Beis HaMikdash. So he has an obligation to give an animal. This one you suggested and it died. The fact is you promised you're going to give a carbon. You didn't. What happens though, if you say I'm giving this animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and the animal dies, that's it. So this animal is dead. Then you're not obligated to give another animal. So that's the difference in the din that you asked. If it depends what the guy says. If he says I'm giving this animal, it's only this animal. He says, I'm giving an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and he has to give an animal. Okay. So the Gemara asks now an interesting question. Bani Nazir, one of the things the Mishnah mentioned of the Eight Avedis was, the guy was a Nazir, in a cemetery. And a Nazir can't be in a cemetery, because a Nazirite is not allowed to become Tamei. But a Nazir you could undo, because a Nazir is a vow. If somebody becomes a Nazir, it's a vow. And you could undo the vow. So if you tell me the Mishnah is not mentioning things that you could undo, why is the Mishnah over here mentioning Nazir if it's something you can undo? So the Gemara answers, it's a special type of Nazir. It's a Nazir of Shimshin. A Nazir like Shimshin. What is Shimshin? Not you. What does a Nazir of Shimshin mean? Shimshin, before he was born, the Malach told his mother, you can have a kid who's going to be a Nazir. That became a Nazir from Hashem. It's similar to the concept of the firstborn animal that we just learned. That's automatically holy, you can't undo it. So if a person makes himself a Nazir, then you could undo it. But if Hashem makes you a Nazir, he can't undo it. So the Gemara said, but Nazir, Shimshim was not a real Nazir. Why not? Because Nazir, Shimshim, by two milameisim hu. Shimshim was a very interesting type of a Nazir. a partial Nazir, which means as follows. If a guy says, I'm a Nazirite, yeah? So the din is like this. No wine, no cemeteries, no cutting hair. Shimshin was a unique Nazir. Shimshin was only not allowed to drink wine, but he was allowed to become Tomei for a dead body. That was the din of, the Gemara discusses, the Naziris of Shimshin. So Shimshin wasn't a complete Nazir because he was able to become Tomei in a cemetery. So the Gemara answers, Elahai Tane Issa Kedul Lesli. Meaning, the Tana doesn't take something that what's called Issur Kelim means it's an Issur effective on a different Issur. Meaning as follows. The Gemara says, our Gemara holds, unlike what we just said before, we said, if a guy makes a vow, he's not going to plow on Yom Tif. He makes a vow. He's not going to plow on Yom Tif. It's not effective. Because you're anyway not allowed to plow. But before the Gemara said, what happens if you made a vow, I'm not going to plow during the weekday and on Yom Tif? Then the vow is effective even on Yom Tif. Now the Gemara is changing its mind and says, our Gemara holds that even if you make a vow for Yom Tif and for weekday and Yom Tif, the vow is not effective on anything. Only for the weekday. Not on Yom Tif. Because once you're pre-sworn about Yom Tif, you cannot make a vow on something which you're pre-sworn. That's what the Gemara says. Okay, Amar Rav Eshia. We're finished with this Gemara. Now the Gemara is going into, just last three lines, the Gemara is going into a brand new concept. You know what split personality is? Split personality, you know what it is. You have split sins in one animal. And therefore, if you use one animal that has two forbidden things to it, you're going to get whipped twice. And the Gemara of the Rav Eshia says, Hamarbiya shor psula migdoshim. If a guy breeds a shor psula migdoshim, an animal of the base of Migdosh, a bull, which was disqualified, with a cow, with its own kind, you get whipped twice. Why? Number one, I didn't say it the first time. Gemara says like this. You're not allowed to use Hegdish. Even if disqualified Hegdish, you can't use it to breed. Plus, the fact that the animal is Hegdish, the fact that this animal is Hegdish, and you're breeding it with a cow, which is not Hegdish, it's considered two separate species. It's two species that you're not allowed to breed. The Torah says you can't breed two species. A bull and a cow really is one species. It's the same thing. One's male, one's female. Every animal is male and female. But the fact that this animal is Hegdish, and you're breeding it with a non-Hegdish animal, that itself is called two species. Plus the fact that the animal is disqualified Hegdish, and you're not allowed to breed a disqualified behemoth. So you could breed one animal and get two sins, because what the Gemara Rabbeishi is saying now, if an animal is Hegdish and you breed it with non-hegdish, that itself is a sin. It's considered two species. Rashi says, you know what Rashi says? V'loy shemait. Rashi says, Rashi explained, V'loy shemaiti raya, minolon dechulun v'kotchim kaloyim zebeze, v'dvar teimahu. Rashi says. Rashi says, I don't know where this comes from. Where does the Gemara say it's forbidden to breed hegdish and non-hegdish? Rashi says, Rashi says, I don't know where it comes from.
You're not allowed to use a
hegdish. So that's one sin. Here the Gemara is saying you're getting two avedas. One for breeding species and non-species. Right? Plus you're using hegdish. Gemara says, Rashi says, I don't know where the Gemara got it, but that's what the Gemara says. And then Rabbi Yitzchok, Hamanik b'shar psula megdoshim, if one leads an animal disqualified of an ox doing work with it, like it gets malchus. Because arei guf echadu, it's like one body, but the Torah considers it two gufim. Therefore, he takes it even a step further, that if you work with an animal that's half hegdish and half not hegdish, it's also getting a sin of working with two animals together. In other words, you take one animal that's half hegdish, half not hegdish, it's like two separate animals that you're not allowed to work together with. One second, I'll be start the next Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going into, until now we're learning, the whole Masecht is talking about lashes, malchus. Now the Gemara is going to say, how many? How do you do it? Where do you get it? Like the Gemara is explaining now the whole concept, where do you get lashes from? So the Gemara says, how many malchus do you give a person when they do a sin and they're warned and they did it? How many malchus do you give a person? So the Mishnah says, 40 minus 1, meaning 39. The Gemara says, Shenemar, where do we learn it out from? B'misper arboim. It says in the Torah, you should give him the number 40. So the Gemara learns, what does the number 40 mean? Minyan shu samach l'arboim. The number near 40. Meaning, as the Mefarshim explain, it doesn't say in the Chumash, Yakenu arboim, that's what Rashi says. If the Torah meant to give him 40, the Torah should have said, Yarkenu arboim, hit him 40. The Torah says, in the number 40 hit him. In the number 40 hit him. Like it says, Bemisper arboim. I mean like this, when you're 6 months old, you're in your first year. When you're 13, you're in your 14th year. But you're really 13. But you're in the 14th year. So the Gemara says, the fact that the Chumash says, B'misper arboim, and not arboim yakenu, the Torah doesn't say, hit him 40. It says, in the number 40 he should be hit, meaning the number 39. That's what the Chachamim hold. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, arboim shleim is halakim. You give him smack 40. He learns, the Torah says 40, you whack him 40. But now the question is, v'heichanu leikas yiseida. The question, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where does he get the extra one? Because the 39, the Gemara is going to explain where he gets. But now Rabbi Yehuda, there's an extra one. So the question, where does he get it? Where do you hit him the 40th one? So he says, bank safe of between his shoulders. You hit him the 40th time between the shoulders. The Mishnah is going to say, the Gemara is going to explain where you whip the guy, how you whip him, and the whole thing. But here the Gemara is just asking, where do you give him the 40th, according to Rabbi Yehuda, between the shoulders. Then it says, aimdim eisel of makas haruyas lishtalish. And there is an interesting halacha. When the Torah says you give him 39 lashes, that's the max. Maximum 39. Doctors have to evaluate the health of the person to see how many lashes he's able to get. If a guy can get 10, he's not going to get 39. But the Mishnah is saying now that when you figure out how many malchus he could get, it has to be a number divisible by 3. That means if Bezdin says the guy can get 10, you give him 9. if the Torah says he can get 15, if the doctor says he can get 15, you give him 15. Because it's divisible by 3. Obviously, if a guy can get 10, you don't give him 12. Because then you're going to overdo it. You give him a number of malchus, but it has to be divisible by 3. So if the doctors estimate that he can get 10, so you give him 9 malchus. Because it has to be divisible by 3. That's why the Gemara asks, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where do you give him the extra malchim? According to the Chachamim, you give him 39 malchus, it's divisible by 3. But Rabbi Yehuda holds, you get 40. So Gemara says, what do you do with the extra one? Because where can you give it? Because the other malchus are set up in a system of 3, a divisible by 3.
Why has to be divisible by 3?
We'll see later in the Gemara. The Rashi is Begemara Mefarish, Rashi says. Okay, what happens? Amdula Kabul Arboim. What happens if they said he could take 39? Valeika Mixus, and he got 20. And then the doctor said, Shani Yachal Kabul Arboim, he can't handle the rest. And as originally the doctors evaluated that he can handle all 39. Then the doctors, they started whipping him, and it comes to number 20 or whatever. The doctors say, you know what, this guy's going to die. Forget it. You can't do it. You stop right away. You stop right away, and that's it. He's gone. He's freed. You don't make a makeup date, you know, for the others. Once you get whipped, that's it. What happens, Amdullah Kabul Shmeina Asar, and that was the opposite then. What happens if the doctor said the guy can handle 18 makis? He can handle 18. When they come to 18, they see, hey, you know what, this guy can really take more. So maybe we should give him more. So the Mishnah says, Amdullah Kabul Shmeina Asar, if you evaluate, he could take 18. Umishalaka Amdu Shiyachal Kabul Aboim, and afterwards he said, hey, this guy's a stronger than we thought he was. He can take 40. Potter, he's potter anyway. So it seems benefit both ways. Which means, if they said he could take 39 and he only got 18, and the doctors say, you know, that's it, he stops, he's potter. You never have to make up. The opposite is also true. If they said he could take 18 and he takes 18 and they say he could take more, the 18 is done, that's it, he's gone. He's freed and he's a free man. Okay.